We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, 6 straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 514. Today, we have pitchers and catchers, baby, grown-ass men throwing baseballs back and forth together in their unis, in shorts, probably in shorts. But first and foremost, we got a new kid in the world. Andrew, we had a baby, didn't we?
Well, yeah, we did.
Did we just get another co-host? Did we get our future co-host now?
You know, I was joking with Leanne. I was like, how soon can I just hand the podcast off to him?
Because the Kemp and Harrison show.
At this point. But yeah, after I saw what Leanne went through in the hospital, just to say we had a baby, it seems kind of dirty.
Leanne had a baby.
I was there. I did my part. I tried to be supportive. But I got some stories there. But yeah, if you guys are wondering why Scott's doing the intro and I'm just sitting here as co-pilot, it's because my brain is not working fully right now. And my son Harrison was born last Thursday evening. So it's almost a week ago. And these last 6 days, I don't know. I don't know. what up is down. Down is up. You know, bizarro world shit is going on because I am on a 2.5 to 3 hour life cycle. Basically the cycle of Harrison, who eats, sleeps, and shits every 3 hours. So you gotta kind of do that. But It's been amazing, and a few people have reached out saying congratulations. I definitely appreciate that, but yeah, I guess I the Yankees have done some stuff. I wasn't able to follow. It's kind of weird when it's been like the busiest week of your life, but only focused on one thing. It's kind of a bizarre.
Yeah, everything else gets shut out. You have blinders on because you're in 3 hour cycles, like you were saying. You have to basically attend all of your attention to one thing. You got to, first of all, make sure that, like, this is new. You got to make sure that the kid is fed, the kid is cleaned, the kid is, you know, not crying all the time. So there's a lot of responsibilities now. How was the ride home?
The ride home was fine. He slept. So he's been in the car twice and he's just immediately passed out. I was driving like 15 miles an hour because I was scared shitless, but otherwise, he was calm. Leanne's in the back seat with him. But yeah, there's just so much information. And if anyone has had a baby recently, I guess since COVID, like the nurseries and the hospitals are closed unless it's like a situation where the mother is in serious condition and cannot care for him, mm-hmm. or the baby is in serious condition and needs to go to the nursery. So he was with us every night in the hospital, which is great. But he was born at like 5 o'clock on Thursday, and we get to our hospital room at like 9:30, 10 o'clock. And they're just like, here you go. Here's a baby. I know you haven't eaten in 24 hours. I know you haven't slept in 24 hours. Have fun. And we're just like, Leanne's bedridden because she had to have a C-section. I don't want to call it emergency C-section, but it felt like an emergency to me because as she's pushing, the doctors decide, rightfully so, because of like slight complications, we need to have a C-section. And I'm not joking. From that moment, 5 minutes later, she is in the OR being cut open. So in 5 minutes, they like unplug her from everything in the delivery room, start wheeling her off. And they're like, one of the nurses turns to me and she's like, you got to pack up all your stuff and bring it over to
this
waiting
area. Let's go. Hurry. What are you doing? Why are you following us? Go get the stuff.
I'm like, what are you kidding me? Like our bags are just thrown about because we've been in this room for the last like 18 hours. So I'm just like I'm like literally stomping on the suitcase to like fit it in there. And then like, I'm like dragging stuff down the hallway to this like room that we're going to be in just for temporary after the baby's born. And then they push me into the OR and she's already being cut open. So of course I see that.
You're saying it so eloquently that it's that's a crazy, crazy experience, especially when you're not expecting it going in, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, reverse course, change of plans, let's do this.
Yeah. So that happens. So then that
I talk about expectations a lot on this podcast. And when your expectations are something different in that moment, it's a bit jarring.
That's a bit jarring. But so she's on like pain medications and bedridden for the 12 hours post delivery. So I'm just like trying to change his diaper and like try to figure out all this stuff, like trying to hand him over so he can eat something. So that first night is it's just scary because you're now responsible for this human life. And of course the nurses are there to help, but he's not in the nursery.
Yeah. They're there for if shit goes wrong. This is like when keeping it real goes wrong, that's when the nurses pop up. That's when you hit the red button.
And so I told you in text, I was like, oh, I have a pee story. And so apparently newborns don't pee a lot when they're first born. In their first 24 hours, they're looking for like one good pee, they said. Mm-hmm. And the recovery room nurse told us, oh, he peed a little. So like within the first hour after he was born, apparently he peed a little. But we had no proof of that because she didn't like document it anywhere. So the nurses like the next 24 hours, like he needs to pee. He needs to pee. Look out for pee. Look out for pee. And we're like, okay, well, we were told he peed already. So at like I'm not joking, the 24 hour mark, we're changing his diaper. He had pooped.
Thank you.
And all of a sudden, Leanne looks over at his face and she's like, are those tears on his face? And I'm like, tears? What are you talking about? He's not crying. And then I put my face over and I'm just drilled with piss in the cheek. And then it just starts going like a waterfall. She's like trying to cover it with her hand and it's just spraying everywhere. So we were initiated into the diaper changing club with just an absolute piss shower.
Nice. I love
from
it. I was hoping for the other end, the other initiation, but I'm still confident that will come. There's still plenty of time for that to come too. So
do you have a thing called the PPTP?
I sure don't.
Apparently that's something that parents of boys need to invest in if they find themselves getting peed on a lot.
What is that? So like one of those Shark Tank dad inventions? Like, oh, I need a PPTP so I don't get pissed in the face.
Probably. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see about that. But
that's 3 hour sleep cycles right there to get the PPTP.
I do appreciate everyone who has reached out. I'll tweet out a picture of them maybe later today. Otherwise everything's been good. Leanne's doing well. All things considered, the meds are helping, and Harrison is healthy, and that's the most important thing. Yeah. So It's been great.
Awesome, man. Well, you know, I know it's we've all been waiting to hear the update, so it's great to hear. It's funny because everybody who's been listening to this show for a long time, and there's a lot of people who've been listening for years and years and years. They've pretty much gone through, you know, major life events with us. You know, obviously, Kemp was born. His stuff. Everybody's been along for the journey. I was already married by the time we started this, but you got married. Now you're having a kid. So it's just kind of funny how everybody's come along this entire ride with us through life, like through the lens of the New York Yankees, I guess. It's pretty cool. So glad to see everybody's doing well. Harrison is adorable. We'll send out some pictures later, but let's get into some baseball, man. This is the healthy distraction that we rely on now. And now that you're a dad too, you're going to be looking forward to this for like a different moment. Like, what is that other moment? Oh, it's baseball. Okay. And today, pitchers and catchers, baby. So a lot of things happened this past week while you were in the hospital, while you were in your days. A lot of minor league signings, not huge deals, obviously, for the Yankees, but filled a lot of holes. A lot of things that we were talking about.
Could have some good impact. Could have some major impacts. We said last couple episodes, like, is this it? Is this the roster that they're going to go in with? And we mentioned sort of that list of unsigned players and quality names on there that could help.
Yep.
Like you think about championship teams, and they have these quality, maybe veteran players that do something over the course of the season, over the course of the playoffs, that make a positive impact. Like, you can find it on every championship roster.
I go back to that 2017 team where you look at the construction and the makeup of that team. And yes, we thought it was early at that point, but they really had that. They had, even more so than now, but they had a very healthy mix of veterans who, you know, either hadn't won or some that had and were hungry. And then also your young guys. And that blend, when you find that right blend, it's just a very positive thing to have in the clubhouse and for leadership reasons, you know, in the dugout and as you get into the postseason. So Jay Bruce is a guy that we mentioned. One of the outfielders is still available. Looking at the signing, it was a minor league signing, $1.3 million guaranteed. He's got bonuses starting, I think, after 400 plate appearances, $50,000 bonuses. It just tiers up from 400, 450, and 500. I don't expect him to get to 450 or 500. Probably not even 400. I mean, but
what happens if Judge goes down?
If there's an injury, like, then yes, that's a guy that will go in there. If we're talking about the perfect world situation, and I mean, I don't even know if he's getting the fourth outfield spot. He's probably fifth outfield at this point. Maybe depends. Who knows how he plays? He may not even make the major league roster. There's a lot of things still up in the air with Jay Bruce. He's got to show it. He didn't have a great year last year, but when you look at
really not great since 2017.
He hasn't been good for a while. But when you look at his
looking at his numbers,
his splits are to me the reason why I'm looking at him and not looking at his history as a major league player. He's 33 years old, feels a hell of a lot older than 33. I definitely thought he was older than 33. It seems like Jay Bruce has been around for a long time.
08 was his first year.
Yeah. So, but 631 slugging, 941 OPS against right-handed pitching in 2020. That's really the big thing I'm looking at. I'm looking at, what have you done against right-handed pitching? What have you done? Have you done damage? Are you able to be slotted in on days where we're going up against tough right-handed pitching and, you know, be a tough out from the left side? That is a necessity. It's a team need in the lineup, some balance against the tough right-handed pitching. So if he can be that guy, you know, and he can do that with minimal at-bats, then I see very good value here. We'll see, though. He's got to be able to do it without playing time all the time, consistent playing time. And that's just not something he's really done.
Yeah, at this point, though, that might just be all he gets on any team. So he just has to. It's like these sorts of points for guys like Jay Bruce, their careers can go one or two ways. You can try this role and you fail and then your career is over, or you find yourself thriving in this role and then you hang on for like another 8 years and you bounce around from team to team because in 250 plate appearances, you can give solid numbers and you can be a nice guy in the clubhouse.
Yeah, and that's it. You're right. There is a point in I'd say, especially the power hitters, in the power hitters' career, where they find that opportunity to, you know, to be a glorified DH, but not even a full-time DH most of the time. Just there's an opportunity for them to step in when needed and play their role. And that's what the Yankees need with Jay Bruce right now. So I am hoping that he can do that. We've seen guys, you know, attempt to do this part-time gig, even young guys, it's just not the same. It's not what they're used to. It's not getting the same reps. So it's definitely an adjustment, but if he could do it, there's good value here. I mean, this is what we're talking about all off season is Cashman finding these value plays. There's so much up in the air with that, but if they can hit at least, you know, even 50 to 60% of them hit, there's some good value there.
We talked about like the outfielders that were still available. Obviously Brett Gardner is still available, but there were some others on that list as well. In addition to Bruce, like you mentioned, Nick Markakis, I mentioned Sin Shu Chu. There was also some other outfielders that could have fit similar roles. Are you happy with the Bruce signing over some of those other guys?
I mean, to me, you're looking at them, it's like, you know, what you toss a coin up in the air and you see, I thought Markakis could have been a good fit. I don't know what he's asking for contract wise. Bruce fit the, what they were looking to do with the, I keep saying in my head, the salary cap, but the luxury tax cap, if you will. And he fit the team needed a left-handed bat, you know, better split. So he fit the void. You know, I'd be nitpicking if I was saying one would be better than the other based on the value. But no, I think it's a good gamble. He strikes out still, I think,
over 20%. I think it was 23% over the last full season.
He's like a 25, almost 25% clip guy. But, you know, against right-handed pitching, if that's down and he's able to make contact and he's able to put up good production numbers against right-handed pitching, then I will be a happy camper. That's the ideal thing I was looking for from anybody. But while we're talking about him, before we get into the other guys, I want to go into a mailbag from Andrew Campbell, because I think it directly affects the other left-handed bat that is still a potential. He's still looming out there. He's obviously a Yankee and has been a Yankee his entire career, is Brett Gardner. So I'm going to read a mailbag here. Hey guys, big time, long time. If the Yankees can't find a way to bring back Brett Gardner for a price that fits both sides, should the Yankees consider making pitch to Gardy that would bring him back to the Bronx as a member of the coaching staff, or even a role as a player coach? His career at bats profile as a member, assistant coach, or special advisor to the team would allow Gardner to stay in the dugout while keeping him the salary part of the team below always looming luxury tax threshold. The heart and soul of the team provides would still be prominent in the clubhouse for the 2001 season. I'm not going to read the entire thing here. Look, this is one of those plays where people are holding on for hope. And Andrew is a Brett Gardner guy. I appreciate that. I don't see the Yankees at all. When I'm talking about a player coach for the Yankees, I'm usually joking because it doesn't exist. It doesn't happen.
Those don't exist anymore. Like, legitimately, who's the last player coach in Major League Baseball?
Oh, Pete Rose?
We know how that worked out. No, but it's like, I don't think that role is just like something out of a different era.
Yeah, no, it's not something that fits. It's just not. It doesn't work for this. Brett Gardner's not the guy like that. He thinks he can play. And look, I don't, you think that this completely closes the book on Brett Gardner. I'm not going to say that it does yet, because I still think the fact that he's not on another team and he wants to play, there's something looming. And I don't know, you know, what that is. Jay Bruce was signed to a minor league deal. Yes, there's option. Like he wants to be on the major league roster. There's no doubt. But because of that, because that's not a definite, I still think Brett Gardner's looming.
Yeah. So I was just going to clarify that with you. So the Jay Bruce signing is not definite as far as like impact. Cause I just looked up the spot track numbers and I'm putting them in here now. So the Yankees still have about $11 million in tax space available. Because Jay Bruce, so if he makes the roster, it's $1.5 million, you said?
$1.35 million.
$1.35 million plus some incentives.
But this is, again, this is if he makes the major league roster. So
here's the thing, though. They didn't do this with Jay Bruce for no reason. They did it because they think he might be able to contribute to the roster. So if they do sign Brett Gardner and it's a guaranteed major league spot, that kind of takes Jay Bruce out. So why are you going to do this with Jay Bruce if you're then going to give Brett Gardner a guaranteed roster spot? Maybe you're going to sign Brett Gardner, invite him to spring training and say compete. But are they really going to even go through that whole rigmarole with Gardner? Like, you do that with Jay Bruce, fine, because he's never been on the team before. But you bring a guy who's a career Yankee in to compete for a job, that just seems kind of weird. And that seems more like a distraction than anything to me.
No, I agree with you. And that's where Well, Jay Bruce also can play first base. That's a potential there. You're looking at Mike Ford as a backup first baseman, lefty bat. So you could see Jay Bruce finding a spot on that roster, even if there's a even if Brett Gardner were to be signed still. And again, it's a very, very low risk play. If Bruce doesn't play well in the spring, if they don't like what they see, they don't have to do anything. They can you know, release him from this minor league deal. And a guy like Mike Ford could step right in as a backup first baseman. So if you're looking at it in that way and you see him as a potential slide from, you know, outfield spots, first base, DH, and there's really not much risk because even if Brett Gardner's there, you can still find a home for him. I see that as a potential play. I think the other thing of this is not just Brett Gardner, but they're looking at this as Jay Bruce versus Mike Ford. I mean, that's, to me, after what Mike Ford did last year, when he didn't back up the season that we were, you know, at the end of the year in 2018.
When he didn't live up to your bold prediction of taking over the first
scumbag
base for the home run king of the season.
When that scumbag made me look bad, then, you know, I think that a lot of us were expecting him to pick up, right? Maybe it wasn't to the bold prediction that I have, but we weren't expecting him to fall off the planet like he did last year. I mean, he was bad.
Well, are you throwing it out though? Like you're throwing out
convenient. So it depends. If he shows well in spring, I think that's what they want to see. They want to see if Mike Ford can step up and be that left-handed bat. He's a younger guy. You'd say that 33-year-old Jay Bruce or looking at Mike Ford, you know, I'd say it's a toss-up. So maybe really that's where the competition is.
The fact that Bruce can play the outfield and play first base is a huge step over Mike Ford because that versatility, especially for this Yankees roster, is massive.
Sure. With the injury history there, but the thing is, he's not going to be the fourth outfielder. Mike Tauchman's still out there. He's going to be the guy that slots in. And if Gardner is signed, then it doesn't really matter as much. So then if Gardner is signed, it becomes Jay Bruce versus Mike Ford, in my opinion.
But in a situation like you mentioned, where you're going up against one of the best right-handed pitchers in the game, and you just want to have a little bit more lefty bat in the lineup, you could, in theory, even if Gardner's not on the team, you could say, okay, we're going to put Bruce in the lineup. We're going to have Mike Tauchman in the lineup, and we're not going to take Luke Voit out of the lineup, who you wouldn't want to take out of the lineup if he's producing like he did last year anyway.
Right. So that's where you have the competition of Brett Gardner, Mike Ford, Jay Bruce. Let's see what happens here. You got a bunch of left-handed bats. Bruce has the most flexibility. Gardner has the most tenure. And, you know, Ford is a relative wild card if he can regain the form that we saw in spurts in 2019. So I think it's good competition. Look, I said this the other day, when I'm looking at the roster now and I look back at all of Cashman's moves, and we can get into the other minor league moves in a second here, but I see a lot of competition across the roster. And this is a roster that going into the season, we looked at it as pretty locked up, right? Like there's a lot of spots that are set, but in the rotation, there were not. In the bullpen, after, you know, getting rid of Ottavino and Canely being released after his injury, there's competition there too. There's a lot of competition in a good amount of spots on this team. And when you're bringing in some of these guys that they're not definites, they're not locked for a spot, but they have to compete with other guys, other young guys, to me, that's a very, very healthy, good thing for the roster. And I'm excited to watch spring training because there's going to be battles. There's definitely going to be battles in different positions, especially in the pitching staff. So to me, that's exciting. And now you add Jay Bruce to the mix with a potential Gardner or another outfielder, you know, from some of the invites that they've had. There's competition there. There's no doubt.
One last thing on Gardner. I think he's done. And that's why I just don't see them bringing him back. Look at his Statcast rankings from last year. Literally the only thing that he excelled in was walk percentage, which is still good. But exit velocity, hard hit percentage, expected weighted on base average, barrel percentage, slugging percentage, all near the bottom of the league. K percentage, middle of the road. He could still run. He's still near the top 83rd percentile in sprint speed, which is great. But his actual defense worsened. His outs above average and outfielder jump got worse, and they're actually near the bottom of the league.
We need an acceleration. Is that what outfield jump is, I guess? But that's also reactions.
Sprint speed.
No, not just sprint speed. I need an acceleration speed. I need to know how you're getting out of the gate. because that's always been Brett Gardner's downfall.
Then that would be outfield jump.
No, because there's a reaction. You're reacting to something. I'm talking well, more about first step.
For a fast guy, he can't steal a base. Would never steal bases.
Which comes down to your first step most of the time.
Slow first step. You know, did you ever see that, Tom Amansky videos?
Yes, of course.
Do you remember the one with Ricky Henderson where
I don't specifically remember the videos, but I remember the set, you know, of
he was talking about stealing bases, and he talked about how so many guys make the mistake. Their first step is with their right foot. Mm-hmm. And all that does is you take like a 4-inch step and you plant again. You're wasting time. You're wasting a step. His first step was with his left and he crossed over.
Yes.
So he got like 4 feet. Or whatever it was, instead of 4 inches in his first step. And I feel like it could be as simple as that with Brett Gardner, where his first step is just a dog shit step. And he's not getting, because it's always bang, bang, but he's always out.
Ricky Henderson also started, I used to teach kids when I was coaching pony ball and Little League. I would show them, it wasn't the Amansky videos, but I would show them Ricky Henderson videos of just stealing bases, because there were a lot of different things. That man would start so low and stay low all the way through. I mean, he never really got into an upright position, whereas I think a lot of guys do that. But he was accelerating, it seemed like, for 50 to 60% of the time. He was such powerful, long, wide strides. He was almost climbing as he was running. He's impressive just to watch his form. He's definitely a guy that they should be. Yeah, but you're right. The first step was massive.
So my point on Brett Gardner is that I'm afraid he's done. And at this point, the Yankees need to win a championship, and they don't have any room for a done player just because he's been a Yankee for 12 years.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that's fair. I don't think it seems like they're not weighing that as heavily if they're waiting this long to sign a guy. Because if that was top of mind, all his tenure, he's a Yankee, he's been a Yankee forever, he would have been signed already, right? Like,
he's obviously not,
and he would have been chosen over Jay Bruce probably. So
do you think he's getting interest from other teams? Because say he got another contract offer from a major league team, even if it was $1 million just as a guaranteed roster spot, don't you think that he would go to Cashman, his agent, and say, hey, you know, the Seattle Mariners or the San Diego Padres are offering a $1 million guaranteed spot. Can you meet that? Because Gardner wants to stay. Cashman would give him a yes or a no.
But that's the thing. They're not giving those contracts out. I mean, look at what Jay Bruce just signed. A minor league deal for 1.3 right. with incentives. You have to make the team. They're not giving those deals. One of my big points was looking at those, and he's younger too. Jay Bruce is younger. Looking at those mid 30 guys, outfielders, those veteran guys who are floating around, they're just not valued anymore at all. Every single team would prefer to go and have a young guy that's controlled, cheap as all hell, and younger with upside, way more than Jay Bruce or Brett Gardner. Brett Gardner to me doesn't bring a lot of value to any team unless you're a competitor. And even then, at this point, are you still looking for a guy like Brett Gardner if you're a team that's competing?
I could see the Red Sox signing Brett Gardner because they just traded Benintendi. So they have Verdugo, they have a couple other people in their outfield, but I could see them doing that just as like an FU to the Yankees.
Yeah, well, maybe. We'll see. It depends how much Brett Gardner wants to keep playing baseball and
what about the Rays?
The other option for him is that he stays in shape. He's the guy, first one to come back on.
He's going to be chopping wood. He's going to be chopping wood.
You're damn right he's going to be chopping wood. He's going to be on the farm chopping wood. But if he doesn't get an opportunity that he's excited about, I would not be surprised if he was on the roster at some point during the season. So
I said this like a month ago. I could see him fitting on the Rays roster.
Maybe. I mean, they plug in everything. So who knows? They're adding veteran. It seems like they're adding more veteran players every day to fill in gaps and to throw shit at the wall. So maybe. Couple guys that they signed also, Robinson Chirinos, former Astros, former battery mate with Gerrit Cole, not his personal catcher. When I first heard the news, I was like, wait, was that his personal catcher? No, it was not. I was excited to watch
that
you
was
lose your
Maldonado.
Shit.
Yep,
I was very excited to watch you lose your shit. But it was not the same guy. This is Chirinos who had
things just don't affect me anymore, Scott. I got a kid.
See what
now.
I'm saying?
I got bigger fish to fry.
That's right. It's a little click that just goes off immediately. So Robinson Chirinos really is a depth piece here. To me, not much to see. It's just a veteran guy that may or may not be there. He could be replaced by five other veteran guys.
I do have a thought on this though. Yeah. because Chirinos was a starting, quote unquote, catcher on a World Series caliber Astros team.
Yeah.
He was the main catcher on the Astros team.
Yep.
What is this move for? Is this because they maybe don't believe in Higgy as much as we were led to believe?
No.
Is this because they have an extra roster spot or two extra roster spots, right, for the new rules? And they have the luxury of carrying a third catcher if they need it. And this gives extra insurance for maybe if Gary Sanchez just sucks again and they need more catching, that they have this luxury now?
I think it speaks way more to Gary Sanchez than it does Higgy. I don't think it says anything about Higgy. I think it says everything about Gary Sanchez, and they need some kind of an insurance note to be ready if he does come out of the gate slow and it's not something they're willing to put up with or you know, deal with for an extended period of time. I think it's an insurance policy. I think it's definitely signing Eric Kratz. The Yankees need depth on their catching, in their catching position, especially a guy that now has, you know, a relationship and has experience with Gerrit Cole. That's not a bad thing. So I think it was really just a depth move right here. The other move is Justin Wilson is back in the Bronx after a couple.
I love this move.
This is a great move. After a couple of years with the Mets, pitched well, 2.91 ERA, 26% strikeout rate with the Mets. Terms are undisclosed so far. I haven't seen the money, but I imagine this is a guarantee very close to what Bruce, if he makes the squad. I definitely see Justin Wilson making the major league roster. And I'm sure there's some bonus incentives along with that as well. But
you ready for some intriguing StatCast data on him? Exit velocity, 96th percentile. Hard hit percentage, 92nd percentile. Expected weighted on base average, 75th percentile. Expected ERA, 75th percentile. Expected batting average, 72nd percentile. Expected slugging, 81st percentile. Those are all good numbers. It's all top 25% or better of the league. And for a relief pitcher who's going to be relied on to pitch maybe the sixth or the seventh inning, come in to get a couple tough lefties out in the eighth inning, I love it. This is exactly the signing that they needed to make to give more insurance to this pitching staff.
So let's recap what's happened so far in the bullpen with the deal that Cashman gets a lot of flack for what he does with the pitching staff. Probably not as much in the rotation.
Not the bullpen. Yeah, the bullpen has always been his strength.
Sure. So looking at Justin Wilson, a guy that's been on the team before, you know, Luis Sessa was part of the deal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so Shane Green went to the Tigers, and Justin Wilson, and yeah, I think it was Luis Sessa who came back.
Yeah, when you're looking at Justin Wilson coming in, left-handed reliever, you look at Darren O'Day, right-handed side swindler, the guy nobody wants to face. Doesn't matter what side of the box you're in, side of the plate you're in. Trading Ottavino and his entire contract to the Red Sox, and you're replacing him essentially with these two guys for a fraction of the price. Again, we don't know what the Justin Wilson deal is yet. I have not seen it, but I can't imagine it's anywhere over $2 million, probably under $2 million. Just swap Justin Wilson for Adam Ottavino, and to me, it's an upgrade. You're adding Darren O'Day now as another piece that gives you just a different option, a different look out of the pen. I like what they've done. Plus, you're adding the young guys with, you know, a good amount of upside. I like it.
I mix these trades up. So the Yankees acquired Wilson from the Pirates in 2014 for Francisco Cervelli.
Yes.
Then after the 2015 season, they traded Wilson to the Tigers for Luis Sessa and Chad Green.
Right. That's it. Yep.
Shane Green was a different trade entirely with the Tigers. Was Shane Green potentially in that Curtis Granderson? I feel like he might have been in the Curtis Granderson trade. But anyway, you got Chad Green and Luis Sessa for Justin Wilson. Like, yeah, Tigers probably kicking themselves about that.
So speaking of winning trades, that's
Brian Cashman will win you a bullpen trade all day, baby.
Yep. But not so much in the rotation. That's where the criticism has always come in. Paxton now, it's official. The cycle has closed. $8.5 million deal with the Mariners. He's back in Seattle. He's got bonuses included in this deal that could make it worth over $10 million. So the Seattle Mariners are now walking into a season with both James Paxton and Justice Sheffield in their starting rotation, and the Yankees are left holding a bag.
Sitting there holding their Schmenders in their hand. So can we just be done with dealing with the Mariners at this point?
It doesn't seem like
I don't want to trade for any more pitching from the Mariners. They tried it with Michael Pineda. That actually was the best one that worked out, but it didn't really work out. They tried to acquire Cliff Lee back in the day. It didn't work out with the Mariners. This whole thing with Sheffield and Pax, like, I'm done acquiring pitching from the Mariners. Go do something else. Just go to a different well, please, because I'm sick of drinking this shitty water from Seattle. You know I don't like Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle. I mean, Seattle people hate you too. So the thing is yes, Cashman's looking at this deal now, and it didn't work. Again, injuries on both of those trades completely crushed. I'd say both guys. I mean, you look at what happened with Pineda, and to me, it was just the mind-boggling upside that just never was really, like, that never matured. It never came out. It's probably come out more in freaking Minnesota than, you know, over the tenure of what we saw Pineda. We saw a couple spurts.
Well, didn't he get busted for PEDs in Minnesota?
Who knows? Everybody's been busted for PEDs. But you see a guy that has all the potential in the world, just couldn't put it together. The Yankees never really got what they needed to out of him. He was infuriating to watch because of the spike in talent. James Paxton, completely, you know, marred by injuries, had the big start in the playoffs where, you know, three feet and that ball is out of the stadium. We look at him very differently. But it just didn't work. We knew that he was coming over with injuries, and the injury stayed and completely affected what he was as a player. Yankee said, I'm not dealing with that anymore. And now he goes back to the Mariners. So both trades, no good. Potential there? So, hold on real quick. Before, when I'm looking back at these Cashman deals, I'm seeing that they didn't work. But at the same time, I'm looking at them in the moment when he made the trades, and I'm like, yep, I would probably make that trade again.
Like Jameson Taillon. Like we're saying, we loved it.
It's an easy kill now. It's an easy kill because you look and you know what happened. But when we were back looking at the upside for Paxton potential with what Justice Sheffield hadn't really, you know, been the guy that you know, potentially thought
you can't say that. He had no time in the
major. That's fine, but I don't think he was identified as a guy that they didn't see long term. So I was fine with it. He was the number one prospect, but that's kind of like there's a little asterisk next to that because everybody else was trash. So it's not that big of a deal. So I'm still looking back at the time and being like, okay, I'd probably make that move. Pineda, I would have done that again in a heartbeat as well if I didn't know what happened.
Well, Jesus Montero flopped, okay? But Justice Sheffield, he pitched a little bit for them in 2019, the Mariners, and struggled in the majors. But 2020 in 55 innings had a 3.58 ERA and a 3.17 FIP, okay? That's clearly a step forward in the major leagues for Justice Sheffield. What if he comes out in 2021 and throws 175 innings to a mid-3 ERA and a mid-3 FIP?
It's very possible,
That is a huge black mark on Cashman's resume because that is a clear misidentification of a young left-handed starting pitcher.
Very true. There's no doubt. And I think what Justice Sheffield does for the rest of his career is going to really be a determining factor of how we look at Cashman, because that is a top flight guy that was in there.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
System that they traded for an injury-prone James Paxton. And what they were trying to do, in my opinion, at that point, was capture lightning in a bottle for what they had on the roster. They were going for it. They knew that Sheffield wasn't the guy right then, and Paxton could be a difference maker, and they rolled the dice, and it didn't work. So
when you acquire a guy with injury history and then he gets injured for you, I don't say that's bad luck. I just say that's, well, you knew the risks and then you took them and they didn't work out. But guess what?
It's not surprising. I think we were trying to look at the injuries as well. And you can look at those injuries in Seattle and say some of them were, you know, fluky. Some of them were a bit fluky, but there was also writing on the wall for the type of injuries. Even when he was rehabbing, he would get injured because his body couldn't handle the mechanical changes, or there was more strain on another part of his body, and then that part of the body failed. So the writing was definitely on the wall with him. So we'll see how it comes.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? We've all gone through a lot over the past year plus with COVID. Well, BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in your area, and it's available worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living happier today. You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily to see for yourself. Visit BetterHelp.com/Bronx21. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionals. We have a great special offer for our listeners. You can get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/Bronx21. One more time, BetterHelp.com/Bronx21.
All right, guys, we're going to get into a few mailbags before we get out of here. Obviously, spring training is here. Pitchers and catchers are here. You guys are writing in. So if you have not sent in a mailbag in a while, let's get back in the game. Let's all wake up. We got baseball starting. It's a new season. I think we're optimistic, right, with the way things are going. It seems like guys are reporting on time. Let's hope the Major League Baseball has a good handle on all the COVID stuff and we're able to get through this. But let's talk some A-Rod. A-Rod's always in the news. I couldn't believe it when the new year was transitioning, and Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez were in front of my face, bringing me into the new year in front of an empty Times Square with Sinatra blasting in the background, and A-Rod being the guy that's getting me in here. But Sean Felder writes in, talking about the Hall of Fame and A-Rod. Obviously, Jeter is, they just made the announcement that Jeter's ceremony is going to be virtual. It's going to be something that people cannot go to. We're going to be able to watch it from TV. That's unfortunate. I was surprised by that. I was expecting, you know, there to be some kind of a, you know, I don't know, figure it out to get a certain amount of people in there. But that's not the case. So Jeter will have his ceremony. Thank goodness no Curt Schilling will be staining it. But speaking of stains, and everybody knows my opinions on A-Rod and what he's
done. Speaking of stains, I'm gonna start using you're a stain. That's such an offensive.
It sounds terrible.
It's such an offensive thing to say to someone.
Sean Felder asks, A-Rod. What about A-Rod for the Hall of Fame? I think he should be inducted based on stats: 696 home runs, over 2,000 RBIs for one of the top players in his time, and he helped the Yankees win their last championship in 2009. Look, you're not wrong with the stats. You look at the stats and you see what A-Rod has done as a baseball player, and you're like, of course, that's a Hall of Famer. You look at Barry Bonds, that's a Hall of Famer. You look at Roger Clemens, that's a Hall of Famer. But there is the massive stain of steroids, the backdrop of steroids that will not get these guys in. We're seeing, I think this year, we talked about this last time, this voting was pretty telling on what's going to happen to me with other steroid guys, with them not, you know, really inching closer for Bonds or Clemens.
So much of the Hall of Fame is based on, are you a nice guy? Yeah. Whether that's right or wrong, it's also what you do in the 5 years after your career before you're Hall of Fame eligible, which A-Rod will be in 2026, depends on if the writers like you and will vote for you. Guess what? the eroticence has been in full force since 2015. A-Rod is likable. Barry Bonds, not likable. Roger Clemens, not likable. Curt Schilling, not likable. A-Rod, likable.
Is he?
So I, yes.
To baseball writers, he's likable? Because that's who you're talking to. You're not talking about the general public. You're talking about baseball writers.
I think he's much more likable to baseball writers than he is, than Clemens.
Doesn't he have a new scandal? He does. Because my wife watches this awful show. You know, one of these reality shows that's, I think it's based out of Charleston. And there's just a train wreck of drunk people. It's just like, let's follow around a bunch of people who just get hammered all the time. And you're watching how their lives are getting, you know, destroyed because they're just a train wreck. Sometimes it's entertaining when you see train wrecks because you look at yourself and you're like, oh, okay, things aren't going so bad. My life's pretty decent when you look at shit like that. But she watches it all the time. And I'm sitting there on my computer doing whatever while she's watching it on the TV. And she watches it on demand. And there's like commercials that loop and loop and loop all the time. And one of them is a Shark Tank commercial. And it drives me nuts because they show A-Rod and he says something about you. What does it feel like to identify that this is to ruin one of the best opportunities of your life? And I'm sitting there like, how are you possibly saying this to
other
people?
How are you the one to be able to say that?
How can you possibly say this to other
Look
people?
Look in the mirror, bro, but don't kiss yourself in the mirror, which you have done.
Not only that, but there's a girl on the show who has a rumor tied to A-Rod that they've, that's
Wait,
where there's
the
a
rumor?
Scandal looming. I don't know all the details here, but there is there's a rumor out there that this girl and A-Rod have been texting and possibly hooked up in Miami and J-Lo, there's a whole thing happening there too. So
you'd have to
do you not expect A-Rod to completely
the biggest moron
himself?
On planet Earth. You'd have to be the biggest moron on planet Earth to cheat on J-Lo.
I mean, yeah.
No, but my point is that I think A-Rod is much more likable at this stage than Bonds and Clemens. And obviously his stats are there. And I think that might be enough by 2026. When 2026 rolls around, that's still a long time away.
Andrew, he still has the steroid. I mean, I don't give a shit how likable you are. He still has the backdrop of steroids and was popped multiple times and then lied to everybody.
But there's going
to
be more writers in 2026 that care less about the steroids than currently.
But if these other guys are not getting in, how can you possibly justify A-Rod? If Barry Bonds does not get in, how can you possibly justify A-Rod? You can't.
I see your point, but I think because there will be enough writers by 2026 voting who don't care about steroids, they're not even going to say, well, they're going to look at Bonds and Clemens and say, that's a mistake. They should be in. I'm not going to make the same mistake with Alex Rodriguez.
I don't see it. I don't know. I think if we're not looking at Clemens and Bonds in, I find it very difficult for anybody to even justify the fact that these guys can get in. And it would have to get to, you know, the committee at some point down the road and letting them in, but who knows? So Sean's point about A-Rod, like, yes, justified because of the stats, but then you have steroids and all the other nonsense.
I was looking up some stats for A-Rod, and one thing that I noticed is that he played 92% of his team's games from 1996 to 2010, and he played 162 games, which is a full season, three separate times, 01, 02, and 05. He obviously won the MVP for the Yankees in that 05 season. A-Rod, like many players of that era, and unlike many players of this era, they went out and they just played. And that's so important.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, next one is from Eric Scheinkoff. Eric's a longtime listener. I've been to a bunch of events as well. What's up, Eric? I am disappointed that in terms of spending, the Yanks are not acting like the Dodgers, but a mid-market team concerned about the luxury tax. The cost that cost them a 2017 World Series, no Verlander. And in 2019 and 2020, they didn't do anything. Also, they should have tried for Lindor to get a super infielder. Super infield. George wanted to win first, make money second. How is the reverse? Okay. Guys, there's one thing that's the Yankees are not a mid-market team, and they're not spending like a mid-market team. They are right up against this luxury tax, which is a large sum of money to have on the roster in the first place. Didn't do anything in 2019, 2020. Well, that's not true. Gerrit Cole was signed for a long-term deal, was paid an exorbitant amount of money to come in and be the ace of the staff for a very long time. They got their guy just because this year they didn't go out and sign what really the only opportunity for me to improve it on the free agent market and the pitching staff side was Trevor Bauer. Trevor Bauer got a stupid amount of money. Yes, it put them over. It's short term. So there's an argument to be made there, but there weren't a ton of opportunities for them that were definite. And maybe they don't even think that Trevor Bauer is a definite, because one wild card off the field, you look at his career stats, he's not career-wise, not the guy that he was last year in his Cy Young, campaign, but they could have valued him differently, and they see the other opportunities and played more of the volume game and depth game than going out and getting one guy while staying under. So you can argue both ways, but I definitely don't see them as not a team that's spending money, because they are spending money and they have spent money.
But I mean, what I think Eric's point is that the Yankees, Hal Steinbrenner and the Yankees now are treating the luxury tax cap as a hard cap and not a soft cap. They're not willing. They believe you can build a consistent championship caliber roster by staying under the luxury tax. And they might be right, but the counter argument to that is, when you're the Yankees, you shouldn't have to confine yourself. Why are you playing by the same rules when you don't have to play by the same rules as all the other mid and small market teams that their owners just refuse to spend the money because they can't spend the money? They don't make the same revenues as the Yankees make. The Yankees print money. It's not that big of a penalty when you just look at the balance sheet. It's not that big of a penalty if they go over the luxury tax. But Hal refuses to because he believes in the business model that you don't need to do it.
That's been a business model that they've talked about, and they've been very public about saying that as well. But how does the fact that last year, no fans in the stands, this year, you know, the Yankees, we haven't really touched on this because, I mean, yeah, the Yankees are allowing Cuomo opened up to big.
What was it, 10,000?
It's 10%. So 10% of capacity are allowed
in. So that's
5,000 fans-ish.
5,100 fans, yeah.
I think the technical capacity is 46 and change. But yeah, so it's
oh, did they cut out? They cut out seats.
Yeah. But the thing is, that's a small amount of fans. My question is, how much does that play into the fact that this year and the uncertainty with the collective bargaining agreement, all these things, uncertainty play into not going after a guy like Trevor Bauer this year and going over it for this 1 year? Maybe when there's,
I think they're
maybe
using
when
it as an COVID, excuse
when the COVID haze is lifted to a more clear long term future, and we're able to see a little bit further, you know, down the road. Maybe that shifts a bit when you look at the current roster.
I think they're using it as a convenient excuse. They can say, we can lean into COVID and we can lean on the no fan stuff as a reason why we're staying under the luxury tax. But when you
to be
literally
clear, they're not
do
really doing
the
it.
Math,
they're not really using that as the excuse either.
Well, Hal Steinbrenner said on
he
the
he said it's a consideration,
that,
but they've also talked before COVID that this was a game plan that they want to stay under the luxury tax even pre-COVID.
True, but since then, since COVID, they have said we got hit harder than any other team in Major League.
That's fine, but it's just all it does really is support what they've already said they're trying to do.
So I don't know. I think that when you literally do the math and you realize it's only like an extra 10 to 15 million bucks of real dollars that you're spending if you make one signing that goes over the luxury tax, I can't imagine that negatively affects the balance sheet for the Yankees that much. It can't. You can't run at that thin of margins. It's not like they're running at a 2% margin.
It depends on what you're doing at that point. If you're making a big splash with a player that's a longer term deal, it might make sense, right? It might make some sense. You have a guy locked up. Trevor Bauer would have put them over. So you look at the AAV there, and what was he at?
40 for this year, 45 for next year.
So add the luxury tax penalty to that, because that's what's putting you over. Essentially, that's what your cost is.
I'm not even arguing for Bauer. I'm just saying
even looking at a position player that could have been needed. So let's take another example. Look at like a Michael Brantley. Michael Brantley, what? That's a
15 or was it 16 million bucks?
So even 10 to 15 million dollars, just put somewhere in there. It's still going to knock you over. But then you have
by 4 million bucks.
But then you're adding the difference of the luxury tax, and you're adding essentially that to the deal because that's what put you over, right? I mean, if you're looking at it in that way, depending on how long the deal is, understanding what that is adding to the player. it may just knock the value completely out of the zone, and that's why they're trying to look at other ways. It's damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because if you're looking at a guy like Trevor Bauer, to me, like that's making it extremely expensive for a wild card. He's a joker. I mean, that is what he is. He's a joker. He could be great. He could be middle of the road. You don't know. And then a guy like Brantley just going to make a player that's a nice player, helps the team, just very expensive.
Yeah. I just think, I mean, to Eric's point, and it's not like Eric is making the original point on this, George would not have cared, and Hal cares. There's a difference between the two. There's a different mentality between
them. There's no doubt. All right, man, that's it for mailbags. We're going to cut it. Andrew's got to go change a diaper. And
I got like seven notifications.
His wife is doing well, and you have to go get her for breakfast and whatever she wants for a very long time.
Do you use Kubo?
Kubo, I don't know that.
Like, it's like a baby monitor, and they can, it's looking over the crib, and they send push notifications. I got like seven push notifications. Baby detected, baby not detected, baby crying. Okay.
So one thing I will tell you that we have one of those monitors, and we were like, okay, we need to like understand everything. Is he still breathing? Is still happening? Granted, our situation was a little bit different, but even in those situations, we're like, we're going to go insane. I can't have like 24/7 monitoring and like,
I know.
And like be so, guided by these notifications or the buzzers and beeps and like, no,
I'm still in that phase.
Yeah.
I'm still in the phase of like every time he makes a noise, I'm like, oh my God, is he dead?
Right. I know. Cause it's new and you're responsible for a life. It's freaking scary. But yeah, those notifications, and you will turn those off soon. I guarantee it. Cool, man. Well, congratulations. I know you've been through the ringer the past week, but I know everybody, I speak for everybody's listening to the show. We send our congratulations and excited for Harrison, man. I'm ready for the Harrison and Kemp show. It's soon. It's coming up soon.
Maybe 2026 when A-Rod is inducted into the Hall of Fame. We're going to have like a nine. How old would Kemp be at that point? Nine?
When is that? 2026? That's 5 years. Yeah, eight or nine. Eight and change.
A 9 and a 5-year-old hosting a podcast. Why not?
I love it. There'll probably be a YouTube channel for that. I think that plays now on YouTube. We could do that really well. All right, guys, have a good day. We'll talk to you next week. Happy pitchers and catchers. Let's go.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.